have, the kind of strength it takes to stand before a giant with just a sling and a stone. Surrounded by the sound of a thousand warriors shaking in their armor, wishing they'd have had the strength to stand. But the giant's calling out my name and he laughs at me, reminding me of all the times I tried before and failed. The giant keeps on telling me time and time again, boy, you'll never win, you'll never win. But the voice of truth tells me a different story. The voice of truth says do not be afraid. And the voice of truth says this is for my glory. Out of all the voices calling out to me, I will choose to listen and believe the voice of truth.
Good afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. We changed our song. We have a special show today, so we did some different music. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor today is Team Power, our local Kubota dealer. Team Power is located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they can do everything you want with regards to farm equipment or tractors or whatever you have. Go up and see them. Got some great deals going right now. They have service specials going. So give them a call, 226-9226. Or get them on the web.
Don't call that other number. It won't work.
221 numbers doesn't work anymore. 226-9226, or get them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Unless you want to make prank calls, then you dial the 221 number.
Yeah, you could do that.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so there's a lot of information on the web today for you. Website is wethepeopleradio.us. We are discussing a book called Hard Drive, A Family's Fight Against Three Countries, and our guest is Mary Todd. So we'll give you a little snippet on Mary. I think you're going to find this incredibly interesting, and it's also tied, and actually we met Mary through our guest that we had on China. We've done a couple of shows on China and the different things going on there. And our previous guest, June, sent us to Mary. So this is kind of furthering the things that are going on over there on the Asian Peninsula. I think you'll find it fascinating and sad all at the same time. Mary has been married to Rick Todd for 41 years. Together, they're the proud parents of four sons, including Dr. Shane Truman Todd, who was murdered in Singapore in June of 2012. Mary's an international speaker who earned her master's in organizational leadership from Azusa Pacific University, where she served as an assistant campus pastor. She's currently the pastor at Purpose Church in Kalispell, Montana. Since the morning she heard of her son's death, Mary has been a mother on a mission, intent on exposing evil and fighting truth and justice. The Todd's story has been featured in Financial Times, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, several other local and national newspapers and radio programs, and on an Asia One documentary, and also on 48 Hours. So there's quite a bit of information out there, although somehow, magically, this never crossed our paths until now. The website that they have set up is justiceforshanetodd.com, and it's the number four. So justice, the number four, Shane, S-H-A-N-E, and Todd, T-O-D-D.com. And that is also on our website, along with video. The one thing on the site I do hope you go and view is the video the family put together as a tribute to Shane. It's really super cute. And we've taken, I should just put a little disclaimer in, we've taken some of the music from that. Some of the songs you'll be like, what are they playing that for? Some of them are Shane's favorite songs. We got them from his brothers and from Mary. And other ones we just thought fit. So today will be a slightly different look at politics, I guess. We're going to do an inside story on a family's journey. I don't think you're going to like the journey, but it sure is a cautionary tale.
Yes, definitely. And Mary, I read the book, and I got to tell you, I don't know how anybody could go through what you've gone through in trying to bring this story to the public and get justice, because it really hasn't, you really haven't got it yet. And that's our story. I don't know how we're going to get it all in 2 hours, but
we're going to shut up a lot. So that was the most talking ever from Bill and I.
Yeah, read the book, Hard Drive. I think it really shines some light on what really goes on in China and with the relationship between China and the U.S.
And Singapore just seems so clean and friendly and perfect.
Yeah, just
surprise.
Yeah, no.
So how are you doing this afternoon, Mary?
I am doing well, Aaron and Bill. Thank you for having me on. It's a privilge.
Absolutely. I hope you're feeling chatty.
Of course.
We decided on our way over, we're like, oh boy, we don't even.
What if she's not chatty?
I figured you were chatty. I was just assuming that. But I thought, I don't even have the vaguest idea how we would begin this story, because it is lots of twists and turns. But I'm assuming maybe we start with, tell us about Shane.
Well, Shane is my firstborn son, and he was born in 1980, and I knew he was different from the time he was in my womb, because he kicked so much that he bruised my rib cage.
Oh, wow.
And so the doctor had me sleep with ice packs on my chest.
Yeah.
Just to keep him out of the ribs. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And, well, yeah.
So that was the early rugby practice, I guess.
That's the early rugby practice, and he was walking at 7 months. He was just one of those kids. The emergency room knew me by name, which was really embarrassing, and he was just always hurting himself because he was just one of these kids. But he was also smart, and we knew that from the beginning as well. And so he very interested in science. I homeschooled him through some of his years just because school couldn't keep up with him. And he's the only one. We don't know where he got his brains. We're not like that. And no offense to the other boys, they're not quite up to that part.
Well, reading that story,
I don't even know what they're talking about. I hope we don't have to say any of these things.
The stuff he was involved in was so far over most people's heads that I'm glad you didn't dwell on it too much in the book, because it's very technical. And he had to be a brainiac to even be involved in that type of work.
Yeah, and Bill, honestly, we didn't even know until he died what he was involved with. And to this day, I can't really explain. You know, I can say what I can read off of a paper of what GAN technology is, but we really had no idea the caliber of Shane or how important what he was doing was until after his death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that technology is very technical, and I think that had a big...
He was literally born at exactly the right time, because if he was 20 years older, he would have had no outlet for some of that skill set of his.
Yeah. So I went on to have three more boys, so I am the mom of four boys. And Shane was their leader. We had a great time, a great childhood, and, you know, just a lot of fun raising boys. And Shane was really invested in making sure that the boys did the right thing. John, our next born, Shane really towed the line. Even though he was a wild kid and a smart kid, he really wanted to please. And then along came John, who said, "Why do you want to please our parents? What's going on?" And so Shane really, with all of them, mentored them and was just a great big brother and an inspiration. And so he's left a huge hole in our family with him not being here. But it is a story that God has given us the grace to live, and I believe that at such a time as this that he has chosen our family, and I have no doubt that God's in charge of this story.
Yeah, and it's very timely, too, because of what's going on in the news and what's going on in the world.
Yeah, you
China.
Guys were a little ahead of what was happening. I would imagine back when you very first started this, there wasn't so much that was known about these different companies, the interactions with the intellectual property theft and the technology theft and all that, and now that's really hit the forefront.
We
need to take a really quick break. This first break always sneaks up on us.
Sure.
So there was one of Shane's favorite songs. Not one we've ever played before, but a fun one nonetheless. You're listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh, Susie Q. Oh, Susie Q. Oh, Susie Q, baby, I love you. Susie Q. Like the way you walk, I like the way you talk, I like the way you walk, I like the way you talk, Susie.
So for those of you who might have watched the video we posted on the side of Shane singing karaoke, that was not Shane singing.
That was pathetic.
It was really important that Shane was brilliant because he was not a singer, but he was enthusiastic. He was incredibly enthusiastic. Yeah. I laughed. I thought, oh, we got
Aaron,
it.
Aaron, he said he would give up all of his degrees if he could have been the lead singer in a rock band, and he was dead serious.
Oh, now that audience.
Wow.
So wethepeopleradio.us, do go there and watch the video. He was really funny. You could tell he was just into it. So, and, yeah, you know, some of the pictures, too, you could really see, even though they were even still pictures, you know, that rugby shot where he literally looks like he's standing on the shoulders of his teammates to block a kick. I mean, he wasn't kind of a halfway guy. Nothing.
That's right.
Nothing, just a little bit. I'm sure you had your work cut out for you. God love you. You had three more kids. That's really brave.
Boys.
I know my sister has three boys, so we have some knowledge of how this works. But, four and Shane in the lead.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh my gosh! So he won amazing science fair awards as a little kid.
Yes, people started recognizing Shane in high school. He won second in the state of Florida with a science project that he had, making a battery out of yeast, and it won fourth in the international science fair, so in the world.
Wow!
And he was made a name for himself, and he was second in the state in wrestling. So he was kind of a renaissance man. He did it all. He wasn't just a brainiac. He was an athlete.
Oh, yeah, he was far from nerdy. He was a big guy. You can't really tell how tall he is because I can't tell if the people he's standing next to are short or if he's just really tall.
He was 6'1", so he was 6'1", and his brother John, 6'1", and his other two brothers are a little shorter than that. So, yeah, he's a big but burly boy.
Yeah. So didn't really fit the, you know, scientist mold exactly. So when he was taking off to, you know, go to school, he was looking at colleges and all that kind of stuff. Was this a grueling exercise? Because he probably had a lot of choices.
He did. He wanted to be a Florida Gator, and he applied at several places, was accepted several places, but of course we were living in Florida at the time, and he chose to be a Florida Gator and really loved it. He did his undergrad there and his graduate work, his master's degree in Florida, and then he went on to Santa Barbara to get his PhD in electrical engineering.
So that kind of gives you an idea.
That he,
Yeah, that gives you an idea what he was capable of doing.
Yeah, he looked really young. There's a picture of him when he was receiving his doctorate, and he looks really young.
I think he was probably 25 by the time he finished his doctoral degree. He graduated from college pretty young. Actually, he had to have been older than that. So maybe he was 28. I don't even remember, but he was pretty young. He graduated from college young and got his master's, but it took him, I think, 5 years to get his PhD, so it was quite a process.
Yeah, and some of it you list in the book. I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Isn't that terrible? I bet when you were researching this, and I guess we should point out, you wrote this book with your niece, Christina Villegas.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. So she, whose idea was it to write the book, just out of curiosity?
So, well, let me just say, Christina Villegas is not only my niece, she's Shane's double cousin. So my husband is my husband's sister is married to my brother. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
At first when you read that, it sounds like a Southern tale, but then you realize, no, wait a minute.
No, that's okay. We can
do
that.
And I always tell people it is legal.
Yeah, I didn't want to say legal. Yeah. Just, you can do that.
I had to think about it. I'm like, siblings married other siblings. Okay.
Exactly. So Shane and Christina were best friends and grew up together and were together all the time. And once our government, and I should go back at some point and tell the story of what happened, but once our government shut us down from the highest level, I realized I need to write this book to tell the truth. And in it, you will find that I should be sued 10 times over because I name names.
Yeah, you
do. I tell what happened. I tell the truth. No one has ever sued me because it's true, and I can back it all up.
Right.
So I went to my niece, Christina, who teaches at the university. She teaches writing and political science, and I asked her if she would like to write it with me. And so we did it pretty fast because I already knew the story. I'd lived the story, and I would send chapter at a time to her. I'd write it because it is my story, and then she'd make it shine and fix it and do all kinds of stuff to it. So we worked great as a team, and I'm so appreciative of her partnership and her love for Shane, obviously.
Right.
Well, it's an incredible page turner, and the way that you the way that you guys told the story, you know, obviously there was a massive spoiler alert at the beginning because.
Yeah.
You knew that he had died, but then mm-hmm. how that all happened and the unveiling of all that in the detail, I mean, although we'll talk about it today, I really would encourage people to go read the book. It's a fast read. It's a compelling read.
Well, it also, when you talk about naming names, I mean, we're talking about members of Congress that went on to, work in China. I mean, there were some reasons, I think, that it was never pursued.
You could see all the evil and the ugliness lurking in there. It was just nasty.
It was a bad
people
deal.
Who would talk to you and then later say, oh, I never said that.
And then we'd find out why.
And like all good mysteries, there's still that element of mystery today. But when you, I don't know necessarily that people who don't spend a lot of time outside our country, I don't know if they realize just how different things are. As I had told you, via email, I know some folks, and the guy was in the service and married a woman from Japan and moved here to the States, and the wife one night, just out of the blue, took their daughter and moved back to Japan, and the Japanese government has hidden her from him and the daughter for years. State Department, zero help. He can't even get a welfare check on the kid, much less go to see her.
Well, I've always told people, you know, when you think
that's
our government
a different
is
different deal.
Yeah, when you think our government is bad, go overseas and see the rights and what you know people in other countries have to live with. After reading this book, it really puts in question what our government would be willing to do for you if you got in some kind of trouble overseas. I don't think it's what you think.
You read this book and you realize you're on your own.
You're on your own. You go overseas and you're on your own. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think it depends on what it is. In our case, China has so much money and power over our country
right.
that it was too costly to expose what happened to Shane. He was just a pawn being used, and they were willing to sweep his death under the rug. With all the evidence, everything that we provided, all of that, our government, under the leadership of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama,
and
just shut us down.
And Mueller, and I mean, there's a
I mean,
whole
Mueller's
bunch
in this.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's in this.
Yeah, it's, there's a lot of players, and none of them did anything to help solve
People are like,
this.
Well, for heaven's sake, stop talking about it like we've read the book. You've got to tell us the story. we're wrecking it. Go ahead, Mary.
Do you want me to just hop into the story?
Yeah, we just get all exuberant and everything, and so we'll just stop doing that. We've got a couple minutes till our next break, so you just set the stage.
All right. So Shane, right after his PhD, had several job offers, but the one he took was in Singapore. He wanted an adventure, and he went with a company called IME, and it was under the Singapore government, which is called A-Star. It was under their umbrella, and he wanted to do research, and he wanted to have adventure, and so he moved to Singapore. And things went well for about a year, and then he started working on this technology that we had no idea what it was. After they sent him to the United States, to New Jersey, to get trained, he went back to Singapore, and it was from that point on that Shane started to be fearful. We talked on the phone, as you can see from the video of his life. We were a very close family, so we talked at least once a week on the phone, and Shane started saying, "Mom, I think that they are asking me to compromise you as security. I'm working on this highly, you know, technical," he had to sign an ATAR agreement, meaning that he couldn't transfer this technology to an enemy country, which China would be. But he said that they're having me meet with a Chinese company. I'm just very uncomfortable. So he did say to me, "Mom, if I don't call you every week, call the American Embassy." And I was so naive. I was like, "What are you talking about? You're fine." But as the weeks rolled on, he got more and more agitated and concerned, and he just kept talking about it. We didn't know what Chinese company he was talking about. We didn't know what GAN technology was. We didn't know anything. But we did know that Shane quit his job. He said, "Mom, I'm not going to do what they're asking me to do." He quit his job. He turned in his resignation. He gave him a 60-day notice. He also had applied and gotten a job here in the United States, and he had a ticket to come home. And we were so thrilled because even though I was sure they wouldn't hurt him, even though he said he thinks his life was being threatened, I was sure that he would be fine. And so he was scheduled, his ticket to come home was July 1st, 2012, and it was on June 24th that I was at our lake house with my mother, and I was so excited. The day was just beautiful. It was gorgeous. The lake was sparkling. My three other sons were in town. My husband was flying home. He was a pilot for American Airlines. He was flying home that day. We planned a wonderful day on the lake. And I received a message from Shane's girlfriend in Singapore asking me to call her or to send my information so she could call me. And I knew something was desperately wrong at that point.
Hold that thought, Mary, so we don't mess up the rest of it. We need to take a really, really quick break. I hope that you will go online and check out the rest of the information about this program. And when we're done, we'll post the commercial-free archive, and I really would encourage you to send it to other people. The website is wethepeopleradio.us.
The road is long. Strong, strong in
the same. These mysteries of life, that just ain't my thing. If I told you that I knew about the sun and the moon, that'd be untrue.
And we're back. All right, Mary. Great day. Sun shining. Feels
sunshine,
everything is perfect and the darn phone rings.
Yep. I get this call from Shane's girlfriend, and she is screaming, and I couldn't understand what she's saying, and I was just begging her, slow down, stop. Finally, I made out the words that Shane had hung himself, and I just fell to the floor, and I thought, my firstborn son is dead, and I just called my children. My husband was still in the air. I left a message for him. The boys, my mom and I were at the lake. The boys were at our bed and breakfast. They all came in, and we just started planning to get ourselves to Singapore, and at that point, I had no idea what was going on. I knew Shane wasn't suicidal. I knew, but I just took it at face value, you know, what if somebody tells you that.
Sure.
But it was on our way to the airport, we met my husband Rick in Denver. He was flying in, and my son John and my son Dylan and I met him in Denver. Now, this is where God comes in. My husband flies for American. My son flew for Delta at the time, so we were covered. We had our passes. Chet and his wife, my third-born son, were running the bed and breakfast, so they stayed behind with my mom. They couldn't come with us. And we met Rick at the Denver airport, and I get a phone call from my brother, who's a pastor in Southern California, and he said, Mary, we can't wish that something that isn't so, but I don't believe that Shane committed suicide. You know his life had been threatened. If you get his computer, don't open any files. I have a computer forensic guy in my church, and we could get a lot of information from Shane's computer. And that was a God thing right there. We get to Singapore. We meet with the Singapore police. Tracy Goins from the vice consul with the American Embassy was there with us. Rick, my husband, took her aside and said, hey, we think there could be foul play. Can we trust them? She called the embassy. She was on the phone for 10 minutes. She came back. She said, yes, you can trust the Singapore police. So we gave them the information that Shane had given us, that his life had been threatened, that he was worried about compromising U.S. security, all that stuff. And basically, Detective Call, who was a young 23-year-old with this grin on his face that I'll never forget, we're sitting in this putrid green little, it looked like an interrogation room. And he said, do you want to know how your son killed himself? And he read from a piece of paper, as like from a novel, about Shane putting up bolts and ropes and pulleys and slinging him over his bathroom door and tying a noose around his neck and falling to his death. And I just kept thinking, wow, that would take an engineer to do all that. And then he said, do you want to see the suicide notes? Nobody has read them, but we got them from his computer. They're typewritten. And, of course, we said yes, and he handed each of us, including Tracy Goins, who was there with us, a copy of the suicide notes. And that was the first sense of joy that I'd had since I heard that my son had committed suicide, because I knew that within the first paragraph that my son did not write these notes.
And there were two notes. There were two notes, correct?
Well, he actually addressed five different people, starting with IME, the company that he worked for, thanking IME for giving him every opportunity to succeed. That was the first paragraph of the notes. And the suicide notes are included in the book.
Yeah, when you read those, if English is your first language, when you read these, you're like, sounds like a customer service on my on my cell phone or something.
Yep. And two linguistic experts have also substantiated that mathematically it was impossible that Shane wrote them, that an American did not write those notes. These are separate from, we didn't know these linguistic experts before we submitted these suicide notes.
No, but that information was really interesting because... and that should have been, obviously, that was one of the, it was really near the end of the book, and, or at the end of the book, really, and all we could think of reading it was, where in the heck was the FBI during all this? But we'll get to that.
And mm-hmm. the point you made yeah. with the notes was, if he didn't write those notes,
yeah, who did?
He didn't commit suicide.
Right. And so I handed them back to the officer, and I said, my son may have committed suicide, but he didn't write these notes. And I knew then in my heart that, you know, that was our first bit of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, my John and Dylan and Rick and I went to Shane's apartment, and I made a beeline for that bathroom. And when I got there, there were no bolts, there were no ropes, there were no pulleys, the door was open. There was no investigative tapes, no, you know, looking for fingerprints, nothing. It looked like the picture of an apartment of somebody getting ready to leave. His bags were being packed. He had a load of dirty clothes, a load of clean clothes. All of his books were packed. Everything was packed. And when I walked in the bathroom and I didn't see any of the things from the description, I immediately called Detective Call. And I said, where are the bolts? Where are the ropes? Where are the pulleys? There's nothing. And it was a marble wall.
Yeah, no holes in the wall either.
John and I, yeah, no holes. Yeah. So they couldn't have taken them down. And he said, I think that you misunderstood me. And I said, no, I didn't. I heard every single word you said. And he said, no, I think you misunderstood. So I called Tracy Goins, the vice consul. And I said, what did you hear? And she heard every single word about the bolts, the ropes, the pulleys. They came over, and so the detective and another man came, and I said, you tell me how my 6'1" son hung himself from this standard size door. I don't get it.
Yeah, his feet would touch the ground. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Well, the pictures of... And then I said, do you have pictures of him hanging? And they took no pictures of him hanging. When I asked why, they said, well, we were more worried about saving his life.
Right.
And he had been hanging there for 2 days, so there was no saving his life. Mm. I think it's very bizarre that in an investigation they would not take pictures. They had pictures of him lying on the floor, and all the blood pooling of the 2 days of there, you know, his arms were completely purple because of the blood pooling. And so that was our next clue.
Well, the big clue is the fact... I thought right away was, if somebody was going to commit suicide, why would they be packing their bags and separating their laundry and doing all these things?
And marking their furniture for sale.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a red flag.
He wasn't that organized, was he?
No.
I mean, he's still a regular guy. No. He was a rugby player, for Lord's sake. He couldn't have been that tidy.
Yeah. No, he wasn't tidy. But he was, you know, he was getting ready to go. It was his last day of work. He had just gone to a party. And so we kept looking for clues in the house. We were like, if Shane knew, he would have left us a clue of some sort. So we kept looking. And, you know, I looked through all the trash. I looked through everything. And, you know, every single thing in his apartment. And I didn't find any clues that would lead me to what happened. But I did find a little, what I thought was a Mac speaker. And we were just taking little things that we could take home with us. And most of his other stuff we gave away to his friends, his bicycle and his clothes and his books and all that stuff, because we didn't want to fly him all the way back. But little things. So I said to my husband, hey, do you think the boys could use this Mac speaker? And Rick said, throw it in the bag.
Like just a speaker for a computer. Just the little sit on your desktop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. If you saw a picture of it, you'd see... and there is a picture in the book that you'd see why I would think it was just a little speaker. So we were there. We were in Singapore for a full week, meeting with the FBI, meeting with the ambassador, meeting with everybody, telling everybody we met that something doesn't add up. But we didn't know anything at that point. We just knew that Shane did not write the suicide notes. We knew that the bathroom didn't line up. We knew that nothing made sense. And so when we got home, my husband and I started to investigate the murder of our own son. And while we were writing the State Department, writing the government, my husband, it's been about 2 weeks after the funeral, Rick said, Mary, where is that thing that you thought was a Mac speaker? And I told him, and he went and found it, and he plugged it in, and it was a backup hard drive that had all Shane's files from his computer on it. And Rick said, oh, my gosh, this is so important. My son John flew it down that day to Southern California from Montana. We knew we couldn't send it in the mail. It had to be flown down. He was met by the computer forensic expert, Asraf Massoud.
Because you guys never looked at it because you had already been...
Already been told don't open it.
That was so smart.
Right.
We've got to take a really quick break, but we will be back with this riveting tale. We're chatting with Mary Todd. We are discussing the murder of her son in Singapore that took place in 2012, and the book is called Hard Drive, A Family's Fight Against Three Countries. You can find all the information at wethepeopleradio.us. Hard drive has now made it to Southern California.
And one important detail I left out is when we got to Shane's apartment, the police had taken both of his computers, his cell phone, and his diary, and would not give them to us. And when we asked why, they said, his death is under investigation.
Except for the fact that they already told you that they had made a decision, right?
Right, right. And how he killed himself. And when I asked for a written description of what the detective call gave me of how he hung himself, he said he couldn't give that to me either because it was still under investigation.
The wall starts to go up.
And they've never given you those things.
They've never returned those things to you. We do have Shane's computer back. After the inquiry, we got his computer back, but the hard drive is an exact duplicate of his computer, so it didn't give us any more information. But what happened was we delivered to Asraf Massoud, and within a short amount of time, it was probably a matter of a couple of maybe 6 weeks. He told us it would take some time. My husband and I were at a pastor's retreat in Lake Tahoe, and we get a phone call from him. I'll never forget because we were driving in the mountains when we got this call, and Asraf Massoud said, wow, I just found something really important on Shane's external hard drive. His computer was accessed 3 days after his death. And we knew right then that whoever accessed his computer had to have been complicit in his murder.
Because that was prior to the police having it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And, well, we had the hard drive from his apartment. So it happened while Shane's body had already been taken, and the police had his computer, but the hard drive was still backing up everything. So it was before we got that hard drive. After Shane had died.
Right.
And so what he found out was it was a file that had been created and erased. And it was a technical file involving Huawei and IME, Shane's company. Huawei is the largest telecommunication company in the world, and they're the ones that are on the news all the time. we've never heard of it.
And just for people who aren't familiar with that, because at first I was like, Huawei, I've never heard of that. Mm-hmm. And June explained to me it's H-U-A-W-E-I. So it's the company that starts with H, although it sounds like it starts with W. So anyway.
Right. And it's pronounced Huawei. And so that was all new to us. Well, his computer showed this file that had been created and erased. So my husband, Rick, said to Ashraf Massoud, check everything that has to do with Huawei and IME and what kind of technology they were involved with. Well, it ended up that Shane, his computer showed that he was working on an ongoing project between IME and Huawei to co-develop an advanced amplifier using GaN technology. And on his computer, we saw that there was an export license clearly showing that the technology could not be transferred. So we knew something, but we didn't know anything about Huawei. Now, this is another God thing. On October 7th, 2012, Shane was murdered, the summer of in June of 2012. 60 Minutes had a segment on the Chinese company, Huawei, and it was all about their stealing technology. And that is when we knew for sure. We were like, wow, this is really powerful. So we started begging for help, and no one would listen to us, no one in our government. But there was a man named Ray Bonner who was an investigative reporter, and he was a friend of a friend of ours. And he caught wind of our story and started working with us and working with us and working with us. He dug and dug, and we found out so much through his investigative work, which ended up then becoming the Financial Times story that I sent you guys that was written in January of 2013 that really gets into the technology, what Shane was involved with, what had happened, what we discovered. And so that launched everything. We thought our job was done. We thought our government will take over. They are going to make this right. We went to Washington, D.C. three times. 48 hours was followed us everywhere we went for a whole year. We went to Singapore several times. We just kept hitting roadblocks, and we didn't understand why until we met with Congressman Wolf from Virginia, who had been on the Huawei committee, and he told us, you guys are doing the right thing, but you're not going to get anywhere. And we were so shocked. We were like, why? We have the evidence our son was murdered. We have why the evidence of why he was murdered, what he was working on. And he said, Huawei owns a law firm on every corner in Washington, D.C. They're too powerful and too influential for our government to do anything.
Wow, that had to just hit you right in the gut. And just so people, if you want to go, if you haven't read the book, the technology that he was involved in, or the machine that he was trained in when he came back, was called a MOCVD, which is metal organic chemical vapor deposition machine. Look that up, and that'll kind of tell you what he was involved in. Big stuff. Telecommunications, military. Well, it wasn't supposed to be military, but it was sold to the Chinese kind of clandestine.
Yeah, they were pretending it was for communications, but it had a military application.
That's
and
right.
That was,
and that's what they were squeezing him for.
Yeah.
So. Right. So the frequency was way too high to be it was a military use frequency. And what GaN technology is, it's the most powerful and dynamic advancement in telecommunications and military applications. It's a new semiconductor, and it's 10 times more efficient, say, than silicon. And,
right.
And so it's a very, I mean, it can make airplanes disappear. You know, when the 777 disappeared, GaN technology has that ability. It's a radar jamming system, satellite communications, missile guiding system. It's lighter, it's more powerful, and much faster than any of its predecessors. So it was really powerful, powerful technology. And so when experts, Steve Huettner, a military radar expert who spent 30 years in the defense industry, a giant Raytheon, he reported that the specifications were far too high for just a normal, civilian use.
And yeah, cell phone technology.
He says this just smells like defense work. And then Robert York, the same thing. He was a professor at UCSB, and he was a leader in gallium nitride. He said it was well above a cellular network and more on the lines of the level needed for radar. And so then we come to find out, that the CEO of Huawei was a major in telecommunications research for the People's Liberation Army before he retired and founded Huawei.
Oh, what a shock.
That would be the Chinese government.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So our life changed in an instant from that Financial Times article, and we were traveling. I was speaking all over. We were just trying to drum up support and trying to get people to help, and people did. Senator Daines was great. Congressman Wolf was wonderful to us. And then there was Senator Baucus, who wanted to go to Singapore with us. He helped so much trying to get a FOIA request, Freedom of Information, trying to get a Senate investigation into the death of our son. And then there was one day that I got a phone call from his legislative assistant, Laura Rausch, who said, "Mary, there's nothing more that we can do for you." And I was shocked. I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "No, we've done everything we can. We just can't do anything more." And it was that day, that very day, later in the afternoon, that it was announced on the radio that Max Baucus became the ambassador to China.
Yeah, how about that?
Mic drop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah. Was he really helping was he doing what he said he was doing in the beginning, or...
Yeah,
it's all lip service.
I think
once you read it, you really figure it out. Mary, we're gonna we've got to take a hard news break here, but we're gonna come back in. Mary is our hostage for the second hour because obviously this story just goes around and around. It's very complicated but simple at the root of it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Hometown Melody, it dreams like you.